Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank, conveniently serving Middle Tennessee with 13 locations. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning. And as we do every Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Does a great job covering all things NFL. Charles, what's going on, man? How are we doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing today?
We are great. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning. So it's been kind of a crazy season here in Nashville, Charles, as you well know, with the injuries and everything that's happened. And yet here we are. They are 1 week away from a win against the Houston Texans, and they're the number one seed in the AFC. What kind of, a job do you think Mike Vrabel has done this year, and should he be coach of the year in the NFL, in your opinion?
Yeah. You know, I think he's got to be in the mix. Like, I think he's, you're going to need to present a pretty good argument to beat him at this point. Here's the thing. I think Matt LaFleur in Green Bay it's going to be Matt and Mike. Like, I think those are the two guys that are coach of the year's probably more of a split vote than any other when it comes down to that panel, the 50 voter panel. And I think it's because everybody appreciates something different. So, you know, one of the things that Matt LaFleur is going to bring to the table is Matt did a lot behind the scenes with Aaron Rodgers that I don't think a lot of people know about, to kind of keep things together last off season. You know, I think one of Aaron Rodgers' biggest sort of champions in the organization to, I think kind of smooth things over and just get him in the door, and knowing that, hey, if I could just get this guy in the door, we can make things a heck of a lot better. You know, Matt was somebody who did a heck of a lot of work, in the off season, and then in season, people probably don't appreciate what it's like to coach Aaron Rodgers and, manage that kind of a personality and, you know, have a functional offense where you give up a lot to the quarterback, but then also retain, you know, your leadership in front of the team. So I think Matt, given his cumulative record and everything that he did this year to really make the Rodgers situation work and get everybody back together, is going to play pretty heavily in the voting. Now, that said, Mike Vrabel down the stretch, I don't think anyone can sit there and stare at the Tennessee Titans. And I think what they've rostered, like 80-plus players this year, the injuries, the change in identity when Derrick Henry goes down, to be sitting there with the number one seed and have the opportunity to lock it up. And not only that, regain a player that you lost and be a pretty scary team in the playoffs. I can't speak, you know, any more highly than Mike at this point, or any more highly of Mike at this point. He's definitely someone who's deserving of a lot of votes. I think, you know, Mike's got a great chance to win the award, and it's a very commendable job that he's done this season. I think some of this is going to come down to people are going to look at Tennessee's schedule, and they're going to say, okay, how do we feel about the schedule? How do we feel about the wins? Is the sitting on the number one seed at this point as impressive as it looks from the outside? I think it is. I can't say whether or not Mike's got my vote at this point, but I feel pretty good about the guy. And I don't think he's done a better coaching job, honestly, since he's gotten there, given all the different, you know, struggles and hurdles that they had to go through this season.
Yeah, and for the record, it is 88 players, NFL record, in a non-strike year. Yeah, which of course, as you may recall, Charles, the 87 Lions were amazing with the replacement players. I think they went 3-0 that year, but they were atrocious otherwise.
If the Lions could get the league to strike in perpetuity, you know, they could turn the franchise around. That is just, I mean, it's unreal when you sit there and consider, and especially when the COVID stuff really hit hard. I talked to a number of, you know, general managers who kind of had to go through it about what the experience was like, and it's as breathless as you will hear someone in a front office talking about having to roster the vast majority of their practice squad, or, you know, look at their street free agent list and pick up as many guys as they possibly can just to play a game. I mean, 80, you're basically 88. That's close. You're getting pretty darn close to rostering two rosters in one season. I mean, a 53 right. man roster. It's crazy. You just never hear of anything like that. And then on top of that, to still be able to come out of the other end of it with an opportunity to lock up the number one seed, and to change your identity so fundamentally, not change it, but I mean, to lose Derrick Henry and to have so much of what you do well offensively flow through one player and lose that player and still survive it and then potentially regain that player is, I don't know that I've ever seen anything like this. So, for anyone who would discount anything that Mike Vrabel or the Titans have done this season, I don't think they're really paying attention. It's probably one of the more impressive things that I've ever seen. Now, I'm probably also now guaranteeing the Texans win.
Pretty much.
Like any time this season that I've gone all in and said, like, hey, this is really impressive and I really like what this team's done, you know, chaos has entered the chat. But I think that I would be stunned. I'll put it that way. I'd be stunned if they didn't close out the season in the kind of fashion that you would expect from the number one seed and lock that position up.
So how do you feel about the playoff picture on that side of the league, Charles? If they are the one, I mean, you got obviously we don't know what the Chargers, Raiders, and all that stuff, but I mean, it's some really fascinating possible first round matchups, including Bills, Patriots, possibly coming together. Like, who is it? Is it still Chiefs and everybody else, despite what happened Sunday in Cincinnati?
Yeah, the AFC. I mean, it's every team in the AFC has had moments this year where people have kind of pointed to them. Even Cincinnati, where people kind of pointed at them and said, "Man, that's a scary, it's a really scary team to deal with." And which is why I think getting that number one seed is so fundamentally important, even in the NFC, to have that bye, I think gives you such a significant advantage over anyone else. And it's not just getting things at home, but for the Titans, having a week for some guys to rest, giving Derrick Henry an additional week, and then sort of letting, you know, the Hunger Games happen in the first round. Because, you know, Buffalo, New England would be a crazy matchup. Cincinnati, Indianapolis, especially with the way Cincinnati's playing right now, would just be a crazy matchup. And then, you know, the Kansas City and the Chargers, if that were to come to fruition, you know, Kansas City all of a sudden looks a heck of a lot like, you know, even with the loss, looks a heck of a lot like the team that we all expected coming into this season. They've rounded back into form. Between the two, the AFC and the NFC, I think it's far more important to have that number one seed in the AFC. Although I will say, with the NFC, Green Bay probably is the one team where I was like, you know, maybe Kansas City's the other one, where I was like, if you get the number one seed, having the playoffs come through your house in, you know, considering the time of the year it is, gives you a really big edge. I think Green Bay and Lambeau, it's, you know, everyone's going to be freezing their nuts off and going like Lambeau through the rest of you know, the playoff picture. But I still think I sit there and I look at Tennessee and I'm like, hey, if there was one team I picked out of the field to say, hey, you know what, let's sit out the first round and let everybody beat each other up, I would have picked Tennessee. That's how fundamentally important I think that seed is. But the, you know, the AFC, I don't know if it's because of how this season has gone, but I still look at kind of the field and it feels like any of those teams, even the Chargers, feels like any of those teams gets hot right now, they're all capable of being Super Bowl teams. It's weird to say that, but it really does feel that way. I don't see any just total frauds in the field.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Charles, kind of a two-part question here for you on the Antonio Brown stuff. Obviously, we all saw what happened on Sunday with Antonio Brown. What do you think that means for his future in the league? And what does this do now for the Bucs, who are already without Chris Godwin? Now you don't have Antonio Brown. What do you think it means for Tampa Bay as they head into the playoffs?
Well, in terms of his career, I never say never just because of how the league is. You know, I you can't count on things changing, you know, for an individual or for a team that might court kind of, you know, disaster in bringing this guy in again. But it, at least in the immediate aftermath of everything that, that happened with him leaving, you know, bouncing out of a game in a fashion that no one's ever seen before, every team I talk to is like, no way, we're done. Like, we would never touch that guy. We would never touch him. And it's, you know, I'm talking about like playoff teams that could use a high-end elite receiver, and he might actually come in and make the difference between a Super Bowl run and not. Teams are just like, no, absolutely not. And will that last? I don't know. You know, I'd like to say that, you know, opinions can be consistent and lasting, and people can kind of stick to their guns on things, but it's not that kind of a league. So, you know, long-term, I think he's probably done in the NFL. I can't say that for sure just because of the nature of the league. As for Tampa Bay, I mean, it's as monumental a loss as it could be at this point. They really, really needed him. He was their number, you know, with all apologies to Mike Evans, he was going to be their number one guy down the stretch. He was. Tom Brady trusted him. He was somebody that, you know, could eat up 15 quality targets a game and make a you know, consistent impact. And it just, for this to happen, it was the worst possible time for Antonio Brown to do an Antonio Brown thing. And yet that's kind of where they're at. But this is also, it's the part of the trade that they exposed themselves to when they decided to bring him in. Now, once they won the Super Bowl, it was sort of like, well, whatever happens now, we already accomplished really what we wanted to accomplish. We made the deal with the devil, you know, and sold out a little bit for this situation, won the Super Bowl. Anything that happens after this is just sort of frosting. But that said, there's a little bit of damage. I mean, Bruce Arians looks like an enabler. Tom Brady, in some respects, looks like an enabler. Because, you know, for Antonio Brown to get to this point and to do what he did mid-game in front of everybody, you know, to do it to his teammates, to do it to a coaching staff, to do it to himself, I think there's an element of a guy who never felt like he felt entitled to not change, probably because Bruce Arians, after the vaccination card fiasco, redrew the lines for him and went to bat for him and told Peter King he's got a new history and all these different things. And every time Tom talked about him, he was framing things through a mental health standpoint, which, you know, I'm sympathetic to, but the problem is that Antonio Brown has had such a long run for such a long time with a number of different incidents that I've kind of likened it to like we're grocery shopping where we're picking some things and not and applying mental health to it, where it's either all mental health or it's not. There's just been too many things, big and small. And I don't know how at some point there's not an element of responsibility that he's got to take in what he's done to himself and what he's done to other people. You know, even if it is a mental, you know, illness issue at this point, I think Antonio Brown has had plenty of opportunities where people have begged him to get help and tried to help him, that there is responsibility that falls on him for continuing down this path.
So, Charles, we've had a lot of discussion last couple of days about analytics in the NFL, in particular because some of the guys you know, who run some of those sites are talking like worst one seed ever for the Titans and all this stuff. I just want to get your thought, like, you know, Football Outsiders, DVOA, you got obviously the Pro Football Focus stuff, which to me, like the grading of a game, I think is comical. Of players in a game, like instant grades. But I just wonder, how much more do you use it in your job, and what do you think about just the overall influence of that on the game, both from the media perspective and then also inside these team buildings?
So I use it kind of the way a lot of NFL teams do when you talk about you know, any of these sites that aggregate a lot of data. So Pro Football Focus, the team, you know, whenever I talk to teams about what they utilize Pro Football Focus, it's always like two things. I hear, number one, throw the offensive line grades out the door because they don't understand, you know, how certain players are supposed to function or how we grade our guys in particular, because we might ask something of them that the Pro Football Focus crowd isn't looking for on the all 22. So just because Pro Football Focus says this guy got a D, we might run the tape and go, no, it's a B+, because here's what we were looking for, and this is how we grade it. So that's always one thing that's been very consistent. The other thing is people say, yes, it does have value because it gives you snap count. It gives you data that tells you where someone lined up a certain percentage of the time. And you know, that's pretty helpful. That's kind of where I use it, particularly when it comes to end of year voting, like MVP, All Pro, all these different things. I will stare at the data and go, okay, where did, you know, is this a slot? How many times did this player line up in the slot, or was he an outside receiver? Defensive backs, just all kinds of different things. About it helps me focus some of my questions about what happened on the field when I run into a situation where I have to decide between a couple of different players. So if I reach out to, say, a pro personnel guy who's done a lot of advanced work, or a GM, or whoever else has stared at a lot of film, I can say, here are the two guys I'm looking at. Here's what I'm kind of seeing here. Can you help me figure out who deserves the nod in this situation? It can be helpful, but I'll give you an example. I think Trevon Diggs, you know, has become like a really big conversation because they have him ranked like between 90th and 100th at cornerback. And, Trevon Diggs gives up a lot of yardage. He's a very Marcus Peters type of player who's very aggressive. He will bite on first moves. It will burn him at times. But the Dallas Cowboys rank him, immensely high because what they want him to do is be aggressive, create turnovers, which is what that defense thrives on. It's what they believe makes their defense great. And yet they're pretty nonplussed about the whole yardage thing. They're like, that's fine. We'll take, a guy who's going to pick off 11 balls for us, or wreak havoc where, quarterbacks have to take, they have to take a second and think, do I want to throw in this guy's direction? And what he does for us, you want to say he's the 90th best cornerback in the league. We think it's a joke that you would ever suggest that, but it's because of what we value. So if I was Titans fans, I wouldn't get too deep in the weeds about, what someone's ranking you or whatever. Just go out and play. If you're going to be the number one seed, who cares what any publication or, frankly, anybody like myself or, other teams or whoever thinks, oh, geez, that's a weak number one seed. Oh, well, nobody cares. If you win and you go through to the Super Bowl and you accomplish your goals 10 years from now, no one's going to look back and go, man, that was a really weak Super Bowl champion. No, come on, man. Like, guess what? You get minted. And no one remembers after that, how ridiculous. I mean, it's just fodder, honestly, man. Like, it really is. And I do think there's a place for data and analytics and stuff. But I also think at the end of the day, no one really remembers, any of those rankings as long as you do what you're supposed to. Let's be real. I watched Zach Taylor on Sunday go for it on fourth down at the end of a game against the Chiefs where I was like, this dude's out of his mind. Like, what is he going for? Like, what are you doing? How many times can you screw up and continue to go back to it? But then they won, and I was like, oh, I guess we're just not going to forget about that.
Coach of the year.
Matters more than everything else. So if you want data and you want to know where guys line up, I think it's immensely valuable. But when it comes to the grading, I think it's more important how other teams are staring at a scheme and a player than or team itself is staring at its own scheme and player than, people who are selling a product, which is ultimately what Chris Collinsworth and, everyone else at PFF and some of these outlets are doing. Instant grades, Robinson. By the way, real quick, before we go, instant grades are, I'm sorry, man.
So like, dumb. So dumb.
It's crazy. It really is. It's crazy to me. And I get the utility of it and understand why they do it. But when they started doing the instant grades, I was like, man, this is like the opposite of what breaking down film was supposed to be about. I'm with you there. I just, that whole thing to me was, it has always been very suspect. So
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, joins us every Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock. Charles, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys. Have a safe new year.
Absolutely. You as well. Charles Robinson, our guest, joins us every Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock. We'll come back, react a little bit to what Charles had to say. Got more of your thoughts to get to on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, The Game.
One last time. How do you leave this place, Ben?
I don't know. With a win. I'm just so thankful for the fans, my family, obviously, and the good Lord has blessed me in so many ways. We still got another game. I'll be excited and ready to go for that, but this is just an awesome place.
That was Ben Roethlisberger after a win last night on Monday Night Football. Probably the last time we'll see Ben Roethlisberger at Heinz Field as quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Logan texting in says, Mike Vrabel is coach of the year, no doubt. I'll put money on if Rodgers leaves, Green Bay won't be a playoff team next year. This coming from Logan on the text line.
Now, way to go on, way to go on a limb there, Logan.
Well, look. Do I think that Mike Vrabel should be coach of the year? Yes. Like, this idea that Matt LaFleur, like, anybody can just go in there and win with Aaron Rodgers, I think is just total crap. I mean, if that were the case, why would Matt LaFleur be the coach of the Packers?
Well, you
know, somebody wasn't winning with Aaron Rodgers. They had to fire a coach, and then they brought in another coach.
Yes. Aaron Rodgers, whatever, to dismiss anything LaFleur has done when he's won 3 years in a row is like the opposite of analytics. You know, that's like, just, you're just being way too simplistic with a hot take there. He's done a really good job. And actually, I think Charles brought up an interesting point there that has to be true if you think about it. Like, considering how it looked like it was going to crumble before the season even started, he must be awfully good at juggling things and making people, you know, which is a lot of coaching, is relationships and getting people to work together, right? I mean, that can't have been easy for LaFleur to be in the middle of all that, and they are the number one seed, and I think they're going to be in the Super Bowl. So you got to give him a lot of credit still.
Also, let's just go on and put this on record. Like, if Tannehill left the Titans, do we have confidence they're a playoff team next year? Like, you could pretty much say that about most quarterbacks in the league, and is that not correct?
Well, some Titans fans would say, oh, good, then that's an increase in two wins.
Yeah, but Woodside in there, you just chalk him up.
Logan Dub means dub. Get the Tana double L out of there. Yeah, maybe bring back Mariota. Mariota was pumped, by the way. Did you see him on that that fourth down? He got that first. I mean, he was like first down. You know, he was sticking it to the Colts.
I'm glad they didn't ask him to throw it.
Whatever.
Love you, Marcus.
Yeah. Nothing but love.
We come back, we'll look ahead at the Predators and the Vegas Golden Knights. We'll be joined by our friend Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And it is that time of the week here on Robbie and Rex Road, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Time to go to our 102.5 The Game phone line and welcome in our friend Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst, brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Middle Tennessee's leading Kubota dealer. C. Mace, what's going on, my man? How are we doing?
Doing good, buddy. Doing good. Just getting jacked up. I appreciate the intro music, bud.
Well, that's what we do. You're our man here on the program, my friend, and that music is your music. So we're glad to have you on with us here today. C. Mace, obviously, that's a big-time win for the Predators on Saturday against Chicago. They win the game 6-1. It didn't sound like John Hines was particularly thrilled with the way they played the game after the game. But overall, what did you make of that game on Saturday and the big 6-1 win for the Preds against Chicago?
Yeah, it's kind of – I kind of feel like, you know, as a coach and as a player, when you win like that, you know, you can kind of come down harder and be a little more critical, because it just seemed every one of the pucks they were shooting was going in. And, you know, they gave up a lot, though. I mean, Chicago, you know, we know they've got some good offensive players, but they're not great defensively. And obviously both of their top two goaltenders were out of the game. So has that impacted it? But, I mean, the team finds a way. to win. And, you know, Forsberg, he continues to be hot. So there's a lot of good storylines in the game. Tanner Janot, Roman Josi, and UC Saros again was incredible. But, you know, it's a game where you blow a team out, you do it easy, you don't play your best game, and now you're going to, you know, to play a really good hockey team that you're not going to get those types of goals. You're not going to get those types of chances against Vegas. And so, you know, they had that happen earlier in the season where they played Columbus. They blew them out. Kind of similar. They played really well that game, but then they played Boston the next night. It was a different story. I feel like they're quite ready for the change in atmosphere, I guess. So that's my only concern about having a game like that. But the fact that, you know, the players are aware and Hines is coming down on them too, that should be hopefully bode well for the details, you know, in the game versus Vegas opposed to the Columbus-Boston scenario. But we'll see.
So you got this one tonight, C-Mace. In a week, you got the Avs coming in to Nashville. Too early to think of these as, you know, measuring stick games. I mean, or to think of them as, you know, just a little bit bigger than your average game in an 82-game season?
I don't think so. I think, you know, it's important, you know, throughout the season, no matter when it is, to keep a pulse on that, right? Just to see if, hey, you know, are we for real? We're playing one of the big dogs. Everyone thought these guys were going to be contenders. How do we stack up against them? Where's our game at? I don't think it's ever too early. I think that can be kind of a running thing throughout the season, you know, to compare yourself against some of those teams. And, you know, the thing with the Predators that have really impressed me the most is they've had one of the most road-heavy schedules out of anyone in the league, and they continue to find ways to win. Their special teams are in a good place right now. 5-on-5, they're playing well defensively. You know, UC Saros, everything in their game seems to be in order, and I think when you play those upper echelon teams, you can really see if you're, you know, somebody that can compete. If you're, they are for real, but are they, you know, able to compete and hang with those top teams? And I think that's a fair question for sure. But I definitely think you can kind of gauge where you're at when you play these teams in the middle of the season.
C-Mace, you brought up Philip Forsberg, and, you know, 25 points in 24 games. He's got 15 goals already on the season. We've seen him play really good stretches of hockey before, obviously, in his career. What kind of stands out to you about the way that Forsberg is playing right now, and what do you think's allowed him to be so consistently productive as he's been so far this year?
I think because the team is playing better. I think I know you guys feel the same. I feel like he is a player that has the ability and the potential to be a perennial 30 to 40 goal scorer. He just has that skill set. You know, the thing with him and, you know, a lot of players is maybe consistency. Obviously, you know, some timely or untimely injuries are tough on a player as well. But I think that he's a guy that, you know, maybe hasn't reached his ceiling in terms of what he could do every single year in this league. And, you know, I don't know, everybody says, well, it's contract year, and maybe that is the case. But I feel like because the players that he is playing with and everybody around him is better, that he's better. And I just feel like he's that kind of guy that has this ability. This isn't, you know, one-off a type of thing. I think that, you know, this year more than maybe ever, I think he's, I don't know if he's doing it longer because he's had some great months and some great stretches. I just hope I feel like his game, his all around game is in a better place in terms of his defensive style. You know, he'll still turn the puck over once in a while. All offensive players will, but I feel like he's putting himself in a better spot every single night to have success. And I think that's something he's learned to do, you know, under John Hines and maybe obviously maturity and all those types of things. But at the end of the day, you know, he's finished. You know, he's finishing plays off and he's executing. And you see around the league that the top players will get those chances, or maybe they get one chance a game, but it's in the back of the net. And, you know, Phil's definitely doing that. So I think this is the player that he is.
Well, and I think, Chris, you know, some people might look at like the coaching switch and think that maybe that wouldn't benefit a player like Philip Forsberg You know, just because of his style and Laviolette's style and the change, but it seems that it does. You know, it seems that a lot of things that Hines has put in have not only helped this team be a lot harder to play against, but you know, they're getting production from their top people now too. I mean, do you think that like maybe he's even had a change of mind or more of an embrace, I guess, of this style of hockey?
Absolutely. And, you know, that's a great question, because the hardest ones to convince to play this style of play is your offensive players, your goal scorers. If you say, trust me, if you play stronger on the defensive side of things, you're going to get more offense. And, you know, a lot of people say, yeah, sure, we're just going to try to win games 2-1, and this and that will be in the defensive zone all the time. But the idea behind it is, if you do that, you're going to be playing with the puck a heck of a lot more. And you'll be in the offensive zone. You'll be in your zone less. You'll turn the puck over in the neutral zone. You'll go back on transition if you work hard defensively. If you don't, you're going to be taking chances in the offensive zone. You have four guys up there in the corner. All of a sudden, odd man rush back the other way. You'll be, you know, defending. You'll be running around your defensive zone like crazy. You may get, you know, it might be more of a track meet back and forth type of hockey and see more offensive. But I don't remember any team, Predators team, maybe in the last, I don't know, 5-6 years that have got as many chances as this version of the Preds are, and they're not as offensively talented as the teams in the past because of the way that they play defensively. They play with the puck more. And I think once you do that and once you buy in and you see the results, that light goes on and you're like, okay, this works, and you have success and you win hockey games. That's what it takes. But it takes a while to get to that point. And I think this team and guys like Philip Forsberg, Matt Duchene are at that point. So it's a good thing. I mean, you can see it almost every single game, the way this team competes up and down the lineup. And a lot of that credit has to go to Hines, but also the players buying in and doing the work.
Chris Mason on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. C-Mace, last thing for you here. We got another two-goal game from Tanner Janot the other night. He's got 20 points in 33 games, and like we know the intangible things he brings to the table beyond just the points and the goals themselves. But you know, at this point, like I don't expect the production to slow down anytime soon, based on the way that he's played. What do you think his ceiling could be offensively with the style of play he has, kind of that straight line way of playing the game, and the speed that he brings to the table with his size as well? What do you think is kind of the ceiling he could have offensively as a player?
I really, it's hard to really understand. I don't know what his ceiling will be. Can he keep this pace? But there's no other players that are really like him. I think 10 goals and 100 hits or whatever it is, I think there's only him and Brady Tkachuk in the National Hockey League that have that, right? So he's that type of player. Is he as offensively gifted as Brady Tkachuk, Matthew Tkachuk, those type of players? I don't know. But for a rookie that's, you know, I put something out about it, is, you know, he's fourth in the National Hockey League in time on ice shorthanded. You know, and he's given up only 8 goals in that time. And I don't know where the next rookie is in terms of that, but he's got such a unique blend of skill, physicality, grit, all the intangibles. I really feel I'm a believer in this kid, because he works, he's got impeccable character, and he's got talent. And I think that, again, he's a young player. He's only going to get better. You know, he's not going to get worse. And you're starting to see the way that he can score goals and the way that he sets up plays as well. He's made a lot of beautiful passes, set up guys, and he scores a lot of goals right and around the net, those types of goals. But he also scores, you know, high-skill goals where he'll beat a guy one-on-one, or he'll get position and then, you know, beat the goalie with some stick handling and a nice move. So this kid's legit. This kid is now people know why they protected him, you know. So he's been a great story, and, you know, he's almost like a player like no other in the National Hockey League, to be honest with you.
That redirection he had the other day against Chicago was insane. That thing was going like 3 feet wide of the net, and he redirected it right under the bar.
Yeah, and that was a good shot. That was a good placement by Benning, because he saw that lane. But you're right, though. He was battling in front. He reaches out and tips it in. I mean, the kid's legit for sure.
Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst, has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Joins us every Tuesday morning at 9:30. C-Mace, appreciate you as always, brother. Thanks for taking time to join us this morning.
Thanks, guys. Great chat.
Absolutely. Chris Thanks, Mason, buddy. Brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Middle Tennessee's leading Kubota dealer. We'll come back. We'll react a little bit to what C-Mace had to say. Got more of your thoughts to get to as well on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day here on Robbie and Rex Road. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Remember, FDIC, equal housing lender. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Matthew from Paris texting in saying, "That's okay. Let Matt LaFleur have Coach of the Year. If the Titans get to the Super Bowl, Coach Vrabel will shake his hand after the Super Bowl win and say, 'That's cool. How do you like my Super Bowl trophy?'" This is coming from Matthew in Paris.
Well, what if it's Vrabel against LaFleur in the Super Bowl?
I think that's what Matthew's saying. And then Vrabel is just going to go waltz out the midfield after the Titans take down the Packers and shake his hand, say, "You keep your nice Coach of the Year trophy, Matt LaFleur. I'm going to go over here and raise this Lombardi trophy. We'll holler at you later."
By the way, that was your prediction. Did you know that?
Packers-Titans Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, buddy.
We should revisit our we don't have time today now, but maybe we should do that tomorrow. Revisit our well, I guess we should wait. Let's wait till next week when we actually know the full playoff field. Revisit our playoff picks. But I came across them the other day, and I was like, wow, Robbie had Packers-Titans. That's not bad.
Who'd you have? Packers Chiefs?
Yes. And Michelle had
not bad either.
Chiefs. Bucks. Michelle and I both had Chiefs. Who'd you have? Yeah, Bucks. Chiefs, yeah, Bucks. That's right. Yep.
I mean, all three of those are looking somewhat good right now.
That Chiefs pick, I mean, we were all about to, you know, call them a non-playoff team as of what, about early November?
Yeah.
Pretty amazing. But yes, Vrabel would. He'll take 100 Coach of the Year awards and turn them into scrap metal for, I think, for a Lombardi. I think anybody would.
Josh texting in says, "I saw an article yesterday that if Indy loses to Jacksonville, then the Chargers and Raiders could both technically get in the playoffs with a tie. So theoretically, they could take a knee every snap. Could the league stop that from happening if it played out?"
I don't think the league would have to stop that from happening. I mean, think about how stupid that would be if the Chargers and Raiders both actually came out to kneel.
You know what? We're just going to take a bunch of knees.
You know, I mean, it's funny to think about, but, you know, you're also, you still, if you win, you're also in, by the way. Why do you care? You know what I mean? Like, if you win, you're in, and this division rival of yours is not in. So, this is not, it's funny to talk about, but you know, come on.
Let's also recognize that scenario is contingent upon the Jacksonville Jaguars beating the Colts, which I'm here to tell you, there's a 0% chance that happens. The Jacksonville Jaguars are not beating the Colts. 0%.
If they do and Wentz stinks, then I think that on our show, you know, on the video screen, we should play the Jared Sweaty video and with the theme song. And we should like totally celebrate. We go all the way back around full, just like we came around full circle with the Chiefs. You know, all of a sudden they're the favorite again. We'll come all the way full circle to all those Wentz haters who said it was a bad pickup. I don't think that's going to happen.
I should probably stop like burying people because so far this year, I think I, you know, conducted a funeral service for the Chiefs and conducted a different one for the Bills. And right now, both of them are looking okay.
Well, I mean, how many times have the Titans been, you know, some dirt shoveled on them and then the toast of the town and then shovel dirt again? And, you know, it's the NFL is, week to week, very much more than I can remember this year. Pretty amazing.
You can't be shoveling dirt on Davis Mills. That'd take a whole lot of dirt. Get that thing
covered. His head up. Would just be sticking out of the dirt just pile.
That's why. I mean, Texans always going to have a chance when he's quarterback. No question about it.
I mean, yeah, the ostrich. You know, you can bury them to a certain point, but not all the way.
I got multiple texters now saying the Colts haven't won in Jacksonville since 2014. I understand that.
We've talked about this.
Yeah. That's about to come to a very, very abrupt end on Sunday.
It's an amazing stat. I mean, it really is. Because you're talking, you got some luck era games in there and everything. And mostly the Jags have been crap during that time. They've had a couple good teams. But, yeah, we saw Phil Rivers give it away last year. Let me ask you this. If you're, you know, if you were a Colts fan, would you rather right now have Phil Rivers as your QB or Carson Wentz as your QB?
Oh, man. I mean, I think I'm going Carson Wentz still.
Well, I am too. They both throw death picks.
They do.
At least Carson Wentz can push it downfield and make plays with his feet. You know, I mean
well, at least underthrow a nice deep pass where you can get a, you know, pass interference call or something.
He can do that too, as the Niners can well attest. But yeah, it's, I mean, he's not perfect. I just in my mind, I can't escape. I got to do some predictions for sports this year for next year. And I can't escape the vision in my mind of the Colts beating the Bengals and coming to Nissan Stadium to try to beat the Titans for a third time this year. I think that's what we're going to have in Nashville right around January 22 or 23.
Joe Rexroad, I'd like to take this time to congratulate myself.
Yes. On
a hard-fought and well-earned Robbie and Rexroad inaugural fantasy season championship, 12-2 in the regular season, total destruction in the playoffs, a margin of win over LeGoate last night by 70. Robbie Stanley, the inaugural Robbie and Rexroad Fantasy League football champion.
Congrats to you. Thanks to everybody who participated. We look forward to doing it again next year. It's going to have to be an all-new league in terms of getting into the league. Remind us again who your top players were this year.
I had Rodgers and Eckler and Jamar Chase and Mark Andrews, and those were pretty much the core players. A.J. Dillon.
So Chase, like, where did you get Chase?
I think the ninth round, ninth or tenth round.
That's the thing, right? Like, you get a stud like that late, man, and obviously it helps to have Aaron Rodgers. Eckler, that's a good one too, man.
Yeah.
Nice work.
Jamar Chase, he only put up, you know, 55 on Sunday. So that helped a lot. That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Darren Donick and Chase coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.